This Rock Talk podcast recording is an interview and opinion product that is the property of rocksubculture.com, all rights reserved. Rocksubculture.com is not responsible for any statements or opinions expressed by the guests of this program. Welcome to Rock Talk, the official podcast for rocksubculture.com. Each podcast features interviews with special guests to discuss all aspects of popular music. Rocksubculture.com travels the globe to experience, review, and archive live concert events. Interview those involved in producing and performing a variety of genres of popular rock music, as well as find and learn about related studio and stage-used artifacts and memorabilia. Now, let's join our host, Jason DeBoard.
And it's a real honor to talk to you. I'm a big, big fan of you guys.
Oh, cool. Always good to hear.
Yes. Welcome to my podcast, and today my guest is Steve Marker with Garbage. So welcome, and thanks for taking the time to talk to me today.
No problem, Jason.
Yeah, I saw you guys in Vegas last April when you guys just started up touring again, and I'm going to come out to the show next week at the same venue, so it'll be cool to do sort of a one-year-later show with you guys. So do you guys have like mental markers when you have those experiences where you can kind of look back on the last year and what you guys have done with the new album and touring and everything?
Well, I don't think we've absorbed it all yet, really, because we've just been going and going and going and haven't had a lot of time to reflect, to tell you the truth.
Yeah.
We were talking last night. We're kind of in the Midwest right now, heading towards Las Vegas in a week. But we've been all over the world, and it's just been an amazing amount of variety of huge festivals, and we went to Russia and Siberia and Australia and Singapore, and it's just been crazy. And I think it's turned out a lot better than we ever thought it would. We probably kept going on the road a lot longer than we thought we would at first, and we feel like we keep doing better shows.
Yeah.
So I guess we're just getting more confident and loosening up a bit on stage, maybe, and just having more fun. And I think that's the key, is that it is still fun.
Yeah, you know, I saw you guys at the Warfield in San Francisco last October, too, and I definitely noticed a change just comparing, like, April to October. It seemed like, I mean, actually, the April show is actually one of my favorite shows last year, but at the same time, I could see some changes, and, you know, it seemed like you've evolved kind of just since, you know, from touring and getting back together and everything.
That's awesome to hear. I mean, people do tell us that, and I think because we're kind of right in the middle of it, we don't really know exactly what they're talking about.
Right.
but they say, yeah, I mean, it's just, I think people enjoy it when they can see that you're having fun on stage.
Yeah.
And not worrying about every little thing. And if something goes wrong, well, so what, you know?
Yeah.
Sometimes that's the best part of the show, is when something goes wrong.
Right. So your last album was called Not Your Kind of People. And I kind of took it as a succinct way of summing up both your band and your fans. And I'm wondering, is that fan base like a lot larger than you expected it to be when you set out touring again and with the new album?
I can't speak for everybody, but for me, yeah, I think it was a lot. It was a big surprise.
Yeah.
We just had no idea. And I guess that there's a lot of people that, I don't know, kind of feel the same way we do about a lot of things. And, you know, we kind of just try to make music that we want to hear. We have our own radio station. That's what we put on the radio station. So
yeah, that's funny, because I guess
there's some other people like that.
Yeah, that's one of the things I was going to ask you, if you guys are kind of your primary audience when you start making new music, like you're making it for yourselves.
Pretty much. It's pretty much the four of us in a little room and kind of trying to come up with stuff that everybody's going to enjoy and everybody's going to, you know, get jazzed about working on.
Right.
You know, there's a lot of ideas that we come up with that just don't fly because nobody gets excited about it. And those are the ones that, that get erased. And the good ones, or at least what we think are good, are the ones that we keep working on. And that's kind of how that all goes.
Yeah. And I think you guys are kind of rare as a band because you're, you at least seem to be very genuine and authentic artists when it comes to your work. And is it rewarding for you to find success and kind of be true to yourself and what you guys like and what you think is good music?
I guess, you know, I'd have to say that's a really gratifying thing for, to have somebody say, because especially at first, a lot of people saw us as this like totally manufactured entity that was just made up to somehow, you know, make money.
Right.
I guess. And that was so far from the truth. And you know, we'd all been in bands forever. And we started working with Shirley because we liked her and, you know, her ideas and her sound. And really just kind of did the first album for fun with no expectations.
Right.
Just happened to kind of be successful at the time. But people said, oh, you know, you're this, like, manufactured thing. And we never felt like that. So now, finally, I think people are maybe seeing that we are doing it because we love it.
Yeah.
I don't know how else to say it. I mean, it is sort of a, it is just something we feel like we need to do and love to do.
Yeah.
And that's why we do it.
Yeah. One thing I wanted to ask you about, you know, you guys started this band in the mid 90s. Mm-hmm. What is your view on 90s music? Because for me, I've always felt like, I don't know, it's sort of a weird time. Like Nirvana was awesome, but then it sort of spun the music industry into where there's all these other grunge bands. And I didn't really think the grunge, you know, quote, grunge bands really sounded anything like Nirvana. And I wasn't really into that whole scene. And then it seemed mm-hmm. like, you know, the masses were listening to things like Garth Brooks and Kenny G and stuff. So it just seemed like there was fragments of really good music. Like, you know, the Pixies is one of my favorite bands, for instance.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, stuff like that and Sonic Youth. But it seemed like for the masses, I don't know, it just seemed like people generally had bad taste or something. At least in my opinion. I mean, it's all subjective. But
yeah, but does that ever change? I mean, I don't know if it's, do you think it's better now?
You know, I grew up in the 80s, so I loved almost everything in the 80s. But, you know, yeah. I mean, I was a kid, I'm nostalgic about it. But it seemed like since then, it seems like music has really kind of fragmented into a lot of different subgenres of music. And you guys kind of came on the scene and you just had a totally different sound, different attitude. I mean, it just seemed like it kind of came out of nowhere. And I was just wondering how that happened sort of in a musical environment that was just a lot different at the time.
It might be for a lot of the reasons you just sort of listed, which was a lot of what happened right after Nirvana was awful.
Yeah.
And it was just dumb guitars, rock, maybe wearing different clothes, kind of dressed up to try to jump on that bandwagon. And we had been working for like 10 years up to Nirvana, you know, working on sort of underground punk rock guitar bands. And you know, like you mentioned, the Pixies, they were awesome. And
yeah.
All these underground bands, like, I don't know, Killdozer from Madison that we worked with in our studio. But then after, you know, when the big money came along after Nirvana, it just got
really
stale. You know, we were also listening to more like the Wax Trax label, electronic heavy stuff, and maybe Ministry and a lot of electronic kind of dancey stuff from England.
Right.
At the same time, we just kind of felt like combining all that to get away from, you know, I always hated long guitar solos and kind of that sort of ego trip.
Yeah.
Musicianship. And that, you know, then you'd have these so-called grunge new wave bands coming out that, you know, they'd have guitar solos and drum solos. It's like, screw that.
Yeah. Well, I like very vocal-driven music, personally.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's funny you mentioned about the guitar solos, and I was interested in your kind of perspective as a producer. Like, recently there on the internet, someone broke out some of the Clash's music into their component parts. So like on YouTube, you can listen to, you know, Rock the Casbah. You can listen to just the vocals or just the guitar.
Oh, wow.
Or just the keyboards. And for me, it's cool because I mean, I don't have any music talent or ability or anything. I love music, But it's interesting, like for Rock the Casbah, to listen to each component, because you listen to the vocals, it's like, yeah, that's Rock the Casbah. You listen to the keyboards, you know, it's clearly that. You get to the guitar, and if someone didn't tell me, I actually wouldn't recognize it. So I'm kind of interested in your perspective as a guitarist, as a music producer. You know, what is kind of your view of the different elements of that each member brings, and does each element have to kind of carry the whole song on its own, or you know, it seems like you guys kind of break things up too.
Yeah, I think kind of like you said, it's the vocal is what's key.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you can have the best drum part and best drum sound in the world on a shitty song. It doesn't matter.
Right.
It's still going to be a shitty song. And you know, the melody, you know, we're kind of pop geeks and we like melodies and all that. And then the vocals got to be, that's what's so great about working with Shirley, is because she has a very distinctive voice, I think. And,
right.
And you hear it and you know it's her. And I think everything else in the entire record is there to serve that. And if there's a guitar that's fighting for the attention of the lead vocal, then there's something wrong, you know?
Right.
And so we tend to do more just parts that are more pieces of the puzzle that make the song work, rather than some sort of show-off-y instrumental thing.
Right.
And none of us are like expert players, you know? We're not going to be auditioning for a Broadway pit orchestra or something like that. You know, we kind of just do this one thing and we've always done it, and somehow we've made it fit together and work.
Right. You know, you guys came out with your new album last year, and I'm not just saying this because I'm interviewing you. I did my year-end review on my site in December, and I think I picked it as my number two favorite album of the year. But the news now is that you guys are going to go back and, I guess, start in June for something maybe come out in early 14. So what is kind of your collective process, and do you think it's changed now that you guys have, you know, taken the long break and then come back together and done another album? And also with the changes in technology, you know, since the 90s, does that really impact your guys's process for creating music, or is it just sort of another tool?
Well, the recording technology is great. I don't say it's great in every way, but for us, it has let us, we don't all live in the same city, so we can spend time at home, work on stuff and ideas, and you know, you can literally, you know, file share parts around and kind of work.
Right.
We're going to try to be doing that more on the next recording, where it's, we don't even have to be all together all the time.
Right.
And a lot of that's just, it's really expensive to fly people around to so you can sit in the same room. So we're trying to figure out how we can actually sort of collaborate over the internet without being in the same room as much. And I don't know, we just loosened up about a lot of things with the recording. I don't know how much you know of the story, but we got stuck where we were spending so much time in the studio, you know, well over a year on a couple of the records, just recording, and you know, then people get tired and frustrated and want to get away from it, and so everybody go home. It was just really looked tedious. It was tedious, and so now we're going to do anything we can to avoid that. And I don't know exactly what that's going to be, but if it's not fun and enjoyable, for us, we don't want to do it anymore.
Right.
But it is. But you know, I think any music, you can kind of hear that. I think when somebody isn't having a good time doing something, even if it isn't happy music, you know, you have to feel like they're being successful in communicating something. And if they're not, I think you can tell that.
Yeah. So then it seems like you're kind of going in this direction by, you know, doing your own record without, you know, a label, and then doing this more on the creative end. It seems like you're kind of going more towards art and away from it being like, quote, a job. Like you're trying to make it as enjoyable as possible and maybe more artistic.
I would hope that that's true.
Yeah,
and that would be definitely the goal.
Yeah,
you know, and I'd like to figure out how we could keep doing it for a long time without, you know, getting tired of it. And, you know, there's no reason we can't do all sorts of stuff for a long time.
Right.
So I don't know. Just realizing that's been really fun.
Yeah, and with the changes in the music industry, do you think it's important to keep the album format alive? Whereas today, you know, it seems like everything's more single driven and, you know, people just buy one song and not really even care who the artist is. It seems like the younger generations now, you know, everything's about, you know, individual songs rather than albums and artists.
It probably isn't important to do that. We still are sort of clinging on to that notion, I guess, by the fingernails, like refusing to let it go because it meant so much to us.
Yeah,
growing up.
Yeah, I'm the same way.
But you're right. I mean, we also, that is kind of liberating for us too, because we realized that we could just put out a 3 or 4 song EP for a couple bucks on iTunes.
Right.
And that would be totally fine too. So in a way, that frees you up like that too.
Yeah. I read that you guys have a collaboration with the Screaming Females for Record Store Day.
Yeah.
So you're covering Patti Smith's Because the Night, is that right?
That's correct.
And how was that? And how did you like collaborating and also covering, you know, someone else's work?
We've always done, as B-sides, we've done a lot of covers over the years. But never anything that anybody really heard that much. And we were on tour with them last fall.
Yeah, I saw them. They were the ones in their San Francisco show. They were really good.
I think you're right, yeah. Yeah, I mean, and I didn't know much about them before that, and I was just blown away. It was just, Marissa's amazing.
The rest of the band's amazing. she's born to be on the stage, I think.
Yeah, just amazing. We had so much fun and really liked them and said, you know, hey, we got to do something sometime, and you know, one thing went to another, and Record Store Day came up, and let's do something. I can't even remember how doing Because the Night came about. I think Shirley and Marissa were just talking about what song they could possibly do, and we started bringing Marissa out on stage during the shows to do that song with her, and she just shreds on it. Her guitar playing is just amazing.
Yeah.
And it's cool to support, you know, indie record stores too. I think that's something that's, we don't want to lose.
Right. Yeah. So if you could collaborate with any living artist, is there anyone in particular that you guys would love to, you know, do a song with?
Wow. Living?
Yeah.
So it has to be within the realm of possibility?
Yeah.
Or is this a fantasy type question?
Well, it could be fantasy, but still someone possible. You never know.
I'd say David Bowie.
Yeah.
You know, whenever there's a conversation about awesome artists throughout our lives, he's pretty much one of the top guys on there.
Cool.
And that's still around. There's plenty that aren't still around that I could think of would be cool too, but that's not going to happen.
Yeah. So I know we have just a minute or two left. So my last question is, what do you think the legacy of your band is now, and what would you want it to be like eventually? Like, do you have any objective, or are you just, you know, making art and putting it out there?
It's a great question, and I think that somehow we figured out to, like, we just get a lot of messages from people, you know, fans, and a lot of them say that we've had something to do with them getting through a hard time.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes unbelievably awful, or sometimes just getting through a day, you know.
Yeah.
And just to think that we're able to offer that to somebody in some degree is amazing. You know, I think that's why people do art, is, you know, kind of share
right
where they're at. And but the fact that we've, you know, meant something more than maybe a Justin Bieber means to someone.
You know,
a little, couple levels beyond that. Maybe it's not for everybody, and we're not trying to be for everybody, but
right.
That's what's important to me, and if people remember that, and, you know, if it got them through some hard times, you know, with what Shirley had to say, or how we said it, or maybe a couple of things that we sort of stood for. I think that's awesome. So I would have to say that.
Yeah. Well, I will say, like, when I went to that Vegas show, you know, I try to always talk to a lot of fans, and just because I'm always interested in what the fans are thinking too. And it seemed like everyone came from all corners of the globe for that show.
Totally. It's so spread out. It's unbelievable.
And you ask people, you know, I always ask people, what's your favorite band? And everyone there is garbage. And my follow-up question was, what's your second favorite band? And it's like, there really wasn't one. So it seems like the people that you reach, you know, they really, they love you guys, and like, yeah. You know, you it's not just liking, you know, a band or something. I think it goes beyond that. So it's, you guys have a really awesome fan base. So I think that
we really do,
kind of
yeah.
speaks to what you're doing and your music and everything else. So
yeah, we've been really lucky cool. with that.
Yeah. Well, thanks so much for taking the time to talk to me. I'm looking forward to seeing you guys again next week, and looking forward to
wait to get back there too.
Yeah. Cool. Okay. All right. Well, thanks so much.
Thanks so much.
All right.
See you then.
All right.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to our program, Rock Talk. For the latest gig archives, articles, and features about popular music and concert events around the world, please visit us online at www.rocksubculture.com.
Even say Moose Busters.